Welcome back to After Hours with me, Rick Kogan. I guarantee you out there, you thousands of listeners, that not more than a handful of you might, in a pinch, know what the state flower of the state of Illinois is, or the state bird, or the state anything. Robbie Telfer, poet, friend of mine, does know what it is, and he wants to change it, basically, Robbie, correct?
Yes, I do.
Yes, you do. You're very serious about it.
Yeah, I'm super serious.
This state of Illinois has a million problems, but this, I think, this one's easily solved.
Exactly.
This doesn't take money.
Easy win.
Does it?
This could be you could reach across the aisle on this one.
No question.
Or you have the really progressive Democrats and the really conservative Democrats will finally come together in Chicago around this issue.
The state flower is the violet.
Yeah.
And in learning about this to see you, I learned the violet's a state flower of like three other states.
Three other states.
Including Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. So, the hated Wisconsin.
The hated Wisconsin.
Yeah.
The flower plant you want to take the place of the violet has such a lovely story in that it is, to the best of our knowledge, unique to Illinois.
Right. Yeah, it is the Kankakee mallow, otherwise known as Illiamna remota, and its only native habitat is a 20-acre island in the Kankakee River. And that's the only place. It's called Langham Island, and it's the only place we know that the flower originated.
How did you come to know this in the first place?
I liked gardening as a sensitive poet man, you know, so I started gardening and just growing food, and then I became interested in plants that were from Illinois, like native Illinois plants in general, prairie plants.
You researched this.
Yeah. And there is the Illinois Native Plant Society. I decided to just throw them the $15 registration fee, and I joined them, and they were having this big gathering a year ago this month. And they were going to go to Langham Island to look at the Kankakee Mallow.
Had you ever heard of Langham Island?
No.
Or the Kankakee Mallow?
No. As a child, when the Kankakee River was like dried out, we used to walk across it and play with all the mud. but I didn't know.
Says a child from the Joliet area.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They were going to go to this island and look at this Illinois treasure, you know, like what is this? Let's go view this flower that we haven't seen in a long time that we know it's the only flower from within Illinois' borders. And they got there and it wasn't there. The whole island was overgrown with invasive species. And so and I was getting all of this like through the newsletters, you know, and became like wrapped with the story. It was just very
Well, in a way, it's sad. Mm-hmm. The vanishing of every most of the time we think of animals. Robbie and I were just talking about the death and extinction of the passenger pigeon, which you could pinpoint to this one specific bird named Martha who died in Washington.
Hundred years ago,
if memory serves. And Joel Greenberg,
I believe it was in Cincinnati, actually.
Oh, you're right, Cincinnati.
Where most things die. Yeah.
We're all good things.
Just talking crap about Wisconsin and Ohio.
Yeah, we're dumping it. Well, we're Illinois. We're Illinois people.
That's
right. We're Illinois people. But, I mean, there is something tragic in that when you think of all the species of animals and plants that have vanished because man has been so kind to the native environment.
Well, it's just there wasn't much of an idea of things ending. We saw the world as not only endless, but ours to have. And there were people along the way as things started to go extinct, and we knew they were going extinct, who started pointing it out. And there was a lot of opposition. You know, passenger pigeons as a prime example. Yeah. They were a big business to, you know, hunt them. And
food.
The East Coast, there was a popular dish. It was apparently very tasty. And the industry was making up lies about where they saw it. There was a guy who said that the passenger pigeon had changed its feathers, but it was alive and well in South America. And like that was, then people were like, sure, yeah, that can happen.
Yeah, sure. We're fine with this. Let's kill another one.
Yeah, exactly. And then they were hunted to extinction. And so, I think it's often a lot easier to sort of rally around and fall in love with sort of these conservative animals, you know,
right,
cute,
right,
and pretty. But But then you I think of plants.
Then you think of, I mean, I'm a city kid, and I never paid much attention to this till getting a little older. But then you think of and read stories about the rainforest and the fact that there may be in the rainforest every day hundreds, if not dozens, if not hundreds of species of plants that might indeed be really beneficial to mankind that are just being ripped up and destroyed, never to come back.
Yeah, there's this. So I work at the Field Museum now, and which is fun for a poet. And there's this awesome exhibit that has the history of all life on Earth. And they go through each mass extinction.
Wow.
Where it's like, this is because of a meteor. This is because of a bunch of volcanoes. And we're on our sixth mass extinction as a planet, and it's all attributable to humans.
Yeah.
And there's this clock, this meter that goes up and says, number of species to go extinct since 8 a.m. this morning. And it's like an average of like 30 a day
or
something. Is
that right?
Yeah. It's probably more than that now. The exhibit's like older, so it's, so there's probably more dying. And it's you look at that, and it's easy to become hopeless about it. And especially as a patron of the museum, you're like, well, I can't do anything.
Yeah, look, there's that big skeleton of that dinosaur that used to be there. Sue, well, what are you going to do?
Exactly. Yeah. So in my mind, and we could talk about this with the story of the mallow, there's another meter that doesn't exist physically yet, and it's a green one, and it's one that ticks up every time human beings intervene in nature and save a species from extinction.
Oh, wow.
And it happens all the time. It's just that that story is a lot harder to quantify. It's not scientific. It's more
anecdotal.
Anecdotal. Yeah. And so as a poet, I'm full of anecdotes. And,
sure.
The Kankakee mallow is
I got to tell you, Robbie, this must be – how long have you worked at the Field Museum?
Like 4 months.
That must be a wonderful place to go every day.
Oh, yes.
And it must give you, poet or no poet, it must give you this much larger perspective than riding the bus to an accounting firm or something. Do you know what I mean?
I worked in an advertising firm for 7 months, and that is the opposite, I would say, of the Field Museum or working for an arts institution. You know, it's these places are designed – so advertising, no offense to your advertisers.
Yeah, right, sure.
I think it is – it's designed to take from you. No matter how creative it is, no matter how much work goes into it, it wants to take. And a lot of art is the same. But good art gives to you. It
exactly.
gives you something. It gives you something you can grow with. And that's also the mission of the Field Museum, is to give you something – to inspire you, to create wonder in you, knowledge, the beautiful arrangements of things, of the 27 million things in their collections there.
Yeah.
It wants to give people things. And so that's why that number, that extinction number, it gives you a knowledge, but it's a dark knowledge that's difficult to grapple with. And I think there are narratives that are more inspiring for the millions of people who come through the museum.
Yeah. It's especially inspiring for children. I mean, I've had my daughter now 11, and every single time we go in there, it's something new.
Yeah.
And she is a, you know, sort of, she worries. And when you worry at 11, you might get to some position when you might at 25 be able to do something about it.
Right.
Let's take a little commercial break, and then we'll come back and talk about the Kankakee mallow, which was that a year ago? When did you guys, people, go down to the island?
They went a year ago to see it.
A year
ago,
and they couldn't find it. We will leave you on the edge of your chairs and be back in a couple minutes. Well, you've been listening to Robbie Telfer talk about his life and the meaning of life at the Field Museum. Now we're talking about a year ago he went with some fellow conservationists, I'm going to call you, to try to find the Kankakee mallow, and you went to this island. And there was no trace of it.
It wasn't there. I wasn't there personally for that trip. I was still scared to join this new community.
Sure.
I still wanted to cling on to my old ones. But yeah, they went out there. And so immediately the people who were on that trip formed this new conservation group called Friends of Langham Island. And it was founded by a lot of people, including Stephen Packard, So it was one of like the fathers of habitat restoration. And Trevor Edmondson, who lives by Langham Island and works for the Wetlands Initiative. And they're both brilliant, kind people who really devote themselves to making to saving nature. They're yeah. like EMTs for nature.
Right.
And
right.
so they
well
formed
put.
This group. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was a 911 situation. You know, there was this plant that it was our treasure and it wasn't in its native habitat. And so they formed this group and it was too late to see if we could see any that year. And so.
But they came up with a very interesting idea.
Yeah.
Didn't they? That they thought, okay, the mallow is here somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So ecology is fascinating, especially if you know nothing about it, because every day is a new discovery. And so they created – what's great about restoration work is you can do it year-round. You can go in the woods in the middle of winter. You're not cold because you're working, you're sawing, you're moving your arms. There's a fire that you build with the invasive species that you burn, and you warm yourself off the corpses of your defeated enemies. And so it's wonderful. It's exhilarating. So I actually went out with them a few times in the winter, and we would cut down trees, burn them.
They were kind of choking this island of whatever was native to the island.
Exactly. Yeah. It was more of an oak woodland habitat, and oaks have a much more open habitat. And there's a bunch of Japanese honeysuckle. And other trees that aren't from that island. So we, using a map of where we knew the last known location of the mallow was, we cut down the trees that didn't belong there, burned them, and then Stephen came up with the idea that because the mallow seeds, which we were pretty sure were hiding under the surface from, you know, decades of just waiting there, of going to seed and then not germinating, they respond to fire. You know, the Potawatomi Indians who lived here before would burn prairies to help manage mosquitoes and also keep the height of some of these plants down. There's lots of reasons to burn them. And so this plant had evolved to sense when fire had just passed overhead and then turn on.
Sort of almost like saying it's safe out there.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's like, oh, I know that there will be nothing competing for sunlight or nutrients.
Wow.
It's time to turn on. This is when we're going to live. And so they rolled the bonfires using these giant logs and just made these long strips, these 30-foot strips of charred earth. And they tried to make sure that the fires didn't stay in one spot for too long, so you didn't want to scorch the hypothetical seeds. Mm-hmm. And then we just waited. And you know, we visited like as soon as we could, and there were some plants that may have been the mallow, but it was like way too early
sure
to tell.
Right, right.
And then Illinois got more rain than any state in the Union in June. And
right.
Kankakee, like that area was where it all just pooped on. And so like we couldn't go out there. It's an island.
Yeah.
And it's a state was the Department of Natural Resources, like, you can't go on the river. I actually.
But didn't one of your friends say, if need be, that he would swim there?
Yeah, yeah. Trevor, who's listening right now, he's like, I will swim there if I have to. I have to see if the plant's there. And so he didn't have to, which is great, because if we lost him, we'd be lost. but I asked another friend to fly a drone out to the island, and we tried to use a peaceful use of drones and fly it over the island. We couldn't see it. It was just all a bunch of plants. That's all we could see.
Yeah,
And so they reopened the river on August 1st, earlier this month, and Stephen, Trevor, Linda Masters, Michael Swears, and Mike Erzpeka, and Trevor and I, we all went out to the island. And
was there a sense of excitement, or was there a sense of anxiety?
Sure. Well, so yeah, yes, anxious excitement for sure.
Yeah.
And you know, like the boat that we use it belongs to Floyd Ketchpool, and it's like leaking, and we're putting our thumbs in like this aluminum rowboat to just like get over there. While we're rowing over, and we get to the island, and at first we were like, well, let's just try to cut back some of the invasive species, and if we see it, we see it. But then it became, because we just like kept looking for it, and then we're like, well, let's just look for it, and let's try to find it. And so we're walking, and the plants are giant. Like, all the plants that live there, there's very high grasses, you know.
There's
very wet conditions. And we happened upon the burn pile, and we saw it. We saw the mallow, and it had done exactly that. It had germinated where we put the fire.
Wow.
And we went over to all of the different burn piles we did, and I'd say there was about 9 burn piles, and about 7 of them all had seedlings, mallow seedlings in it.
It's a remarkable story.
And it was like the one of them, Trevor just sent me a photo. It's this amazing, just like carpet of mallows, only where we did the roll. And they wouldn't have existed if they hadn't invented this new scientific management technique. These plants were just waiting there in the seed bank for us to do something. And that kind of unique attention is not only like, Steven was not concerned. He was like, I know they're there. Yeah. He'd been around long enough.
That's a lot of confidence.
That's some confidence, and so, which made us think he must have planted them there then. Like, oh, yeah, here they are.
He found them somewhere else and brought them in at night.
Exactly. The rest of us were just like so happy. And, you know, deer had been like chewing on them because they'd been off the menu for a while. So Trevor went back and put fences around them. This amazing program at the Chicago Botanic Gardens went back. It's called Plants of Concern, and they did a tally, and it was over 900 seedlings where there were 0 before. And
it's such a wonderfully, Robbie Telfer, it's a romantic story.
It's a romantic-looking flower, too.
Yeah.
So it hasn't blossomed this year yet, but when it does, it has this beautiful, it gets about like 5 feet tall, the whole plant, and has this sort of spire of pale pink hollyhock-looking flowers with 5 petals, and it smells very, very sweet, and we're very excited to see them back on the island, which, you know, we don't know. We think that we should be able to see actual blossoms next year, which for the genetic health of the plant will be great, because that means it will start to get more genetic diversity, and the bees will start transferring the pollen back and forth between the plants, and it will be revived in a way that the things like the passenger pigeon were not allowed.
And I look at all the attention placed on that crazy spike thing at the
poor Spike
that didn't, you know, Spike, given the look at the crowds that were looking at me, I wouldn't have come out.
You wouldn't have flowered either.
Wouldn't have either. So I mean, I guess when this all happens, that, you know, you will somehow, I mean, you're, you know, advocating for this to become the state flower is a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
It's an easy thing, given the nonsense that they have to deal with in Springfield. This would be the biggest no-brainer. But it's also a way of bringing attention to these issues of conservation. I think that's the ultimate.
That's the idea. That's the scam. Like, I probably shouldn't say this, but I don't really care if it becomes the state flower. What I do care
is that it lives.
Exactly, is that it lives. And, I mean, I honestly, like, when I got home that day after we found it, like, I am a sensitive man. I cried a little because it was such a powerful thing.
You know,
It was like, and I'm no like ecologist. I'm not Indiana Jones. Like to be able to like go through, to be on this island that I got with friends, you know, and to discover this thing that came back because of work we did together as friends. It was a very like powerful, moving moment, and I want that for all of the wild native plants of Illinois, of America, of the world. And I think the way society has disjointed our natural spaces, almost all of them are like islands.
Yeah.
They are separated from each other, and they're all like Langham, and they all need individual care and love with groups of friends who go out there and grow attached to each other and that place through the work they do to revive it and restore it.
Well, no one I know could put it more passionately, and it's not just because you're a great poet either, Robbie Telfer. This is a great story.
It's been awesome so far.
Yeah, awesome is the word. I mean, it's deeply emotional.
Yeah.
It's saving something that one thought had vanished for good. I mean, you were at the very ground level of this whole experience.
Literally at the ground level.
No
of it, yes.
Kidding. No kidding. Robbie, I want you to keep writing poetry, and I want you to keep performing, but you're doing,
We're mixing them together, right?
Like, yeah, you really are. There's poetry in what you're doing right now.
It feels like I'm living a poem.
Yeah. You really are. Whether this becomes a state flower or not, I think it should, because I don't want the same state flower as Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Or Rhode
yeah.
Island, or there's Jeez another heads. One,
Yeah,
too,
Rhode right? Island, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want the same state flower as Rhode Island. Violets are, you know, just fine.
Silence the violets.
Violence the violets. Robbie, it's great to see you.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Again.
It was
no,
a pleasure.
Thank you. This was really, really fun.